This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2014, held at Faith Builders, August 5 through 8.
Well, it brings us to the last session on this particular topic. It's been good to be with you this week. Yesterday, I gave you a somewhat unrelated story that had to do with names and my problem with names and remembering names, and told you about a young man by the name of Henry. I met him in Belize, or at least his brother anyway. Yesterday, I was in a bookstore, and there was a lady there, and I didn't know her name. I jokingly turned to her and said, Henry, right? She said, no, I'm his sister. And she actually was. I was a bit surprised. I would like for you to meet someone this morning that you've seen around. As we travel here and there, as I get around some, I typically leave my family at home. This is a very special trip for me. They've not been with me away from home from this tight trip for several years now. I would like for my wife to stand, if she would. She's the one who, when I'm at Bible school, when it's snow on the ground, she calls me and tells me the heat pump quit, and I'm 4 hours away. She's the one who, when I'm in Haiti, calls me and says my cow died. You see, the real heroes are often not the ones up front. They're the ones back home. I've got an aunt who is struggling with old age, and she is facing some memory loss and struggling in that area. I happen to know I'm on her prayer list every week, certain days. The heroes aren't those up front. They're the ones behind the scenes. They're the folks who pray for the work. Never forget that as you teach school, you're not the hero. Sometimes it's the parents of your students are the heroes. It's been pretty intense these last days, and you probably won't keep everything you took in, I doubt. Reminded of a brother in Belize one time said, he said that it's like this. He said, you can go to the river to get he said, someone one time, they were talking in a group, and they said, well, it doesn't, why come to church every Sunday? Because you just forget what you hear anyway. You can't remember everything. There's no way. Well, he said, it's like this. Come with me. And he took him to the river with a basket. And he said, now I want you to carry some water from the river to the wherever in the basket. Well, he took the basket and filled it, and of course it quickly drained out. He said, try it again, and he took it and quickly drained out. Try it again, and he took it and quickly drained out. He said, you're not carrying much water, but the basket sure got clean. It's a little bit how we are, isn't it? We don't always hold too much water, but as we're exposed to principles in God's Word, hopefully the basket is getting clean. That was also not in my notes. Now let's go to my notes. A Trip to Haiti is what this title is called. Christian Aid Ministries would be my primary contact that I've had in Haiti. I've been to Haiti a total of 6 times now, and I'll go into a little bit more about that later. So I've not had extensive exposure there. A month is the longest I've ever been there. I'll give you a little background on the talk, on the presentation this morning. Christian Aid began in Haiti in around 88 or 89. I'm not really sure of the year. Today, the mission has a compound in Titayen, which would be about 30 minutes, I believe it is, thereabout from Port-au-Prince. And CAM has various programs in Haiti. Before I go any farther, I'm curious. Haiti's not that far anymore. How many of you have been to Haiti? I expected a good amount. Good. Okay. CAM has an office in Titayen, and that's where the warehouse is there, and from there the work goes out. They have various programs, but the school program is by far the biggest, as in the biggest single program. It takes about almost half the budget that they allocate to Haiti goes for their school programs, and a much larger percent than that of their actual time and labor go into schoolwork. It is a work that I feel is extremely important. I'll tell you why. I really appreciate and endorse the idea of enabling people to do their own work. Empowering people to do their own work. And that is the goal of the school program. CAM has no schools in Haiti. They operate no schools, or no American teachers teaching any class in a Haitian school. But we do, however, attempt to help to enable them to teach their own people. Primarily, their support consists of subsidizing teachers' pay. It began as a program subsidizing the pay. They never intended to support the teachers, their complete salary, because they wanted the school to be able to pull their own load all they can. And so they gave them a fairly small amount. Even by Haiti standards, it was not sufficient. It's hardly sufficient to live on, because the school was supposed to help support themselves. Well, the reality is a lot of the schools are simply they cannot afford to pay their teachers beyond the CAM subsidy. And so this last year they did, the CAM has raised the pay, actually doubled the previous pay, in recognition of the fact that a lot of these men, that is the only pay they receive, and so they're forced to work two jobs. They'll teach school, and then in the afternoon go home and desperately work on their plantations, or the gardens they call them, to try to raise food to sell as well. Presently we have, there are about 50 schools in the program, a total of approximately 9,000 students represented in those schools. So 9,000 souls that are being impacted in some shape or form by the work there in Haiti there. There are approximately 500 teachers being supported by this work in Haiti. I first became involved in the year of 2009 when I was asked to go down to help with some teacher training. And we'll get to that in a minute on the slides, and I'll explain a bit more about that when I get there. So I've been back a total of six times now. Five times for the teacher training, and one time to actually visit the schools. And the slides I'll be showing this morning are primarily concerning the school visit we took there. That was in the winter of 2013. We had planned to visit five schools. I only personally got to visit one, four. I missed the one due to a flat tire in the vehicle in which I was riding there. But so without any further ado, we would just go right ahead into a few pictures. And after the pictures, I have a few other comments to make as well. This is intended to be a little more of a lighter session, a little lighter. This is just a general picture of Haiti and what they call tap-taps. The people ride on those. And they're called tap-taps because you see the young man got his hand out there. That is, how do I get that thing out of the way? All right, okay, yeah, sure, yeah. Thank you. Whoops, that's not what I had in mind. There we go. Now we'll try it, okay. All right. And yeah, the rider in the back, when he wants to stop, he will simply tap the side of the truck. And that, so it gets the name Tap Taps there. Okay, we're going, we went to visit a school. Our first school we went to visit was Sanctifier. This is a temporary building. The flood, Hurricane Sandy had destroyed their former school. They were using Good Samaritan canvas. You're probably familiar with that organization, a relief organization. Billy Graham's son, Franklin Graham, kind of heads up the organization. They were using that tarp and were just operating out of temporary sidewalls as they kept on with school. This particular school had a total of 11 teachers and 216 students. Typically, your rooms there are quite a bit. They have quite a few more students per teacher than what we would have in our schools here. They work under some pretty primitive conditions. Oftentimes, the pastor of the church is also the school administrator. That's very common there. Here we simply have a sixth grade room, if not mistaken. We entered and the teacher, which is the man you see there, he had them stand and sing us a song. Haitians love to sing, and they sing well. They really do sing well. I love to hear them sing. Here's another room. I show this picture particularly because to point out to you the teacher's desk. That's his teacher's desk, and when they leave, they carry all the books with them in their book bag. In their book bag, that's the total teacher's supply, is what they carry with them. Operate the best they can with what they have. So just the youngest class in the kindergarten or whatever that was there. Here we have second grade class, and there were 36 pupils in this room with one teacher. And the rooms are noisy. The classes aren't as quiet and orderly as what we expect here. The same room here. Here's a child who's demonstrating to us how to read. He's reading classes on the board. And he's reading, that would be French there. He's reading French. Here's again just a classroom shot, teaching on the board. Here is the kitchen. Now, I suppose, how would you like to cook for 216 students every day with this kitchen? That's it. Students all receive a meal every day. For many of them, that may be the only good meal they get. In fact, a lot of your parents like when their students come to school, in part because they get a good meal throughout the day. So they'll eat in shifts. This is the kitchen. As far as I know, there are no food or kitchen inspections happen there, to my knowledge. The next one we went to was actually Pizzale, which is the hometown of the interpreter that works a lot with us. Some of you may be familiar with him, Aris Labadie. He is unique for me because he married my dad's first cousin. He was a Christian for many years. You'll see a picture of him later on in the session. This is a school in his hometown. He actually would loosely be over this school, although he's not that directly involved. This school had 400 students with 16 teachers. A pretty serious case of overcrowding. This particular room had 41 students in a room. You can't really see the size too well here. We estimated it to be approximately 15 by 15, the room. Now it looks a little bit bigger here, but on my notes that a day we simply estimated the rooms, and it looked like about a 15 by 15 with 41 students in there. And you can see they're pretty tight. That's another room there. So you can imagine test time comes, it's pretty easy to cheat. In fact, it's fairly much accepted to look off your neighbors if you need help. This was the tightest room. These are ninth graders. There were 55 ninth graders in the same size room, about a 15 by 15. A pretty serious case of overcrowding there. But Can you imagine if we would try to operate schools over there? How frustrated would you be as a teacher? You pull out your hair. We could, you know. So we would come in with a big building, first thing, have big elaborate systems that they could never take over. Hence, I heartily endorse the idea of empowering them to teach their own people. This is a kitchen where she cooked for 400 students a day. A bigger facility there. She cooked for us. Haitians have excellent food. They know how to make food. Jonas, how often were you in Haiti?
I think 8 or 9. I'm not sure. About 9 times.
8 or 9 times. Involved with schools as well, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, this picture doesn't look like much to you. This picture, Aris showed us the picture. If I'm not mistaken, this would have been about the first time he actually saw the water flow into this cistern. Aris, like I mentioned, Aris Labadie, the pastor who's kind of over the school there, it's his hometown. He overtook a project to run water 6 kilometers away to his home village. Prior to that, unless you had a cistern under your house where you collected the rainwater, children were carrying water in buckets up to 2 miles away for daily needs, washing or whatever it happened to be, drinking, bathing. 2 miles away, and Aris opened the door for us and turned on the water and just said, look at there. The lines are connected, plenty of water. And on the way, they actually have a cistern that the entire village can get from, as well as some villages through which the pipeline passes en route to Pitsale. Water. I can't quite wrap my mind around the blessing of water. Water, basic to life. And of course, with my interest in geology, I was fascinated by this coral embedded in limestone rock. Actually, I collected several fossilized remains there on this trip. I kept just the small ones, and I got to the airport and took all of them away. I was not happy. But had a few unusual rocks I collected as well. I kind of enjoy. Of course, teachers are collectors, aren't we? We all collect. At least you ought to, anyway. This is the next day on the way to the next village. I thought the terrain was interesting. You can see the mountains there. Some men were working in teamwork there, hoeing up the hillside in preparation for gardening. They hoe ground around there that it's hard to stand on. This is actually from a former trip. I thought the hillside was just too good to pass up there. That is actually as steep as it looks, okay? That's not trick photography at all. I've been on a cornfield that I literally could hardly walk up the sides. We went up and down the field back and forth to get up to the top. And you plant there. Of course, you can imagine when the floods come what happens. A lot of the dirt ends up in the bottom. It's what they have, it's what they use. Okay, the next school. This school had a total of 170 students, and that's the building there. And you can see the lady walking up with water on her head. She is one of the cooks. She carried water to serve the 170 students about a block away to carry the water. That's not considered far at all. Our guide informed us that this school had a good water supply pretty close. This is their kitchen. You can see it back here. You can see it there as well. It's a close-up shot of the same kitchen where they cook for 170 students. Now, this is a few shots inside their school. It's common to have two, or at least the schools I visited. I've not had, this is actually my only school trip, you see, so when I speak of my experience in school, it's not that great. Numerous schools, or the ones we visited, often had two teachers in the same room. And they were not quiet classrooms. The way you could be heard is to overspeak your neighbor. And so some overspeaking was getting done there. young girl demonstrated to us how she could read. And then we had a flat tire prior to getting there, so we were running on our spare. And of course, it's not wise at all to get stuck in those mountains without a spare. So while the other truck went on to the next school, our loads stayed back and fixed the tire there at the local garage. That's the I'm not sure if it's a quick lube or what that is there, but and so they had the basic equipment there. Now, some of you mechanically minded individuals may enjoy their tire fixing methods there. You can see there they had the patch that had an old inner tube out back they brought and cut a patch out. And I think of a patch, I think of, you know, a patch, right? This is a patch. Oh, maybe it's the end of your thumb. Just a little itty bitty thing, because you want to make your patch supplies last, right? That's a little itty bitty patch. And they put it on the hole, and then they clamped on a container of oil. That's a container of oil there. Clamped it, had a little protective layer there on top of the patch to protect it from the direct contact. And then they lit that oil on fire. And of course, the heat eventually melted the patch right into the inner tube. And that's how you patch a tire. It worked great. You can do a lot more with less if you have to. Here's the next school. This is a very, very encouraging school. I happened to be down for the teacher training camp the very first time this school attended, and it was so obvious that this school was different. It was quite different. The pastor had owned a prosperous business in town. He felt called of God to go to the mountains and serve his people there. And so he sold his business, moved to the mountains way back in, and they operated a church and a school there. And he had a group of staff, unusually dedicated, 244 students. This school was quiet. Maybe not by state standards, but it was quiet, orderly. It was just absolutely amazing. It was just incredible. Here's a pastor's house. Use what you have. You have a class in his porch, tarp out back, a class under that. Here's a teacher, very motivated, very, very good teacher. Here's another classroom. And here's inside the chapel. They had two classes, actually had three. You can't see the one. One thing about this group of teachers that was so outstanding was the lady right here, this teacher. She was a polio victim, could hardly walk at all. She could walk, but not too well. And so she needed assistance. And there's something about this group that just spoke so eloquently of the love of God. You really should see them. And their care for her just exemplified what God can do in a people and in a culture when he really gets a hold of a heart, or when the heart is surrendered to him. It was just amazing. We were always blessed by the presence at the teacher's camp, and we were just doubly blessed when we saw it lived out in their hometown. Stanley Fox is there. He's in charge of the training program there, and he knows enough Creole to be dangerous, and the students enjoyed him, and he enjoyed them very much. He's a people person. And of course, they served us a meal. We were not expecting this, but they had they can cook up a meal, good time. Of course, they're very hospitable, and so they'll serve us even if they themselves have nothing the next day. The visitors will get served. Now we're back on the CAM compound here. Just to explain a little bit how I was involved there. Even by Haitian standards, when CAM began to support schools, we quickly discovered that many teachers were being hired because of friendship. Friendship and family connections are extremely important in most third world cultures, and it's no exception there. Many of the teachers were simply not qualified. Many of them could hardly read, but they were asked to teach, and they taught. It was a job in a land where jobs are scarce. Many of them were doing their very, very, very best too. So don't hear me. So hear the whole story here. But as an effort to help that, CAM started a teacher training retreat, we call it. We simply call it TTR. That's how I refer to it here on out as well, TTR. And they we bring the teachers in every summer. In order to be supported by CAM, they have to come to TTR, and we teach on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning is a test. And they have to pass the test in order to receive the subsidy. If they fail the test twice in a row, they would then lose their CAM support. So this test is extremely important, and it's very important to them, and they take it seriously. The building in the background, the open building, is the chapel. That's where the general sessions take place, and then you split off in various areas for more workshop-oriented classes. This program began in 1992. This was the 22nd year we had TTR in Haiti. This year I did not go. We see in many ways the future of Haiti. How can I say this correctly? We'll just say I believe that schools play a major role in the future of Haiti. The problem is not primarily economic. The problem in third world nations is rarely, if ever, primarily economic. It's spiritual, and that bleeds out into all areas of life. Let's go on to what happens there. Here we have, you may have seen that fellow before. That is Eris in the back. My translator, the one I mentioned, he is married to my dad's first cousin. And of course, everything I say there has to be through translator. I tried to learn some Creole the first year there. I was there a month, first year with my family. I worked hard. I could converse kind of amazingly well. Between my Spanish I knew and the English, you can kind of hobble along, you know. I went back home and I promptly forgot everything I ever knew. I tell my students that I have an excuse. I'm getting a little thin on top. I say it just kind of evaporates when you get older. Marcus Kaufman has been there for a long term as far as the TTR. That's another translator. Milo, he's explaining the world history with a timeline. And here we are in chapel, we're singing Deep and Wide, and Do They Ever Love to Sing. It's just, you know, when you do the motions, we kind of do them in a little bit of Americanized Mennonite fashion, you know. When they do it, I mean, it's deep and it's wide, okay? And it's, okay. And this is test day. Now you wonder, you perhaps wonder in a way, why we are scattered out so far. On a bench. It's simple. If you don't, they'll cheat. Simple as that. I'm sure that not all of them would, but it's simply a problem. It's just kind of accepted, I guess. Well, we don't accept it so well in our school there, but it's a cultural thing we had to work through. So when we always have to separate them out for test time. This is interesting. I thought it was interesting to me to see my name on a Haitian Creole test. I took that picture there. That's my class there, Science and the Bible. It's actually quite refreshing to teach to them. The knowledge is quite limited, okay? But they're coming into the modern age. And all this, particularly the Science and the Bible workshops, when you open up for questions, there are lots of questions, hard questions. What about this thing? You know, because they're coming into the modern age, and there's just a lot of help they need, particularly in this area, because poor countries, in a sense, idolize America, and they want to be like them. But so this science is in the Bible is an issue. Here they get a certificate at the end of the week, a diploma stating their grade, and if they passed or not, and also their grade. And they often get, or they also get a gift as well. This year, I think they were receiving a, I'm not sure what that book was. It was some Christian book that had been translated. Just a staff meeting in the morning there before we began. Food line. And we do something unique there that's actually pretty commonly done in Haiti. You would be offended if I tried here, I'm pretty sure. But when they arrive on campus, the first thing they do, they get a food ration card. And every meal is marked on there. And so when they come through, they will give, the lady right here has a hole puncher. And they will, he right now is handing her his card. And they'll hand the person the card, and you simply take a punch and you punch out that meal. That way it serves two purposes. They can't come through twice, which would happen. And also people can't come in pretending to maybe be a teacher and get free meals. I could say a lot more about that. We have to go on. You can never say everything you want to say. Just relaxing in the afternoon. This is my favorite shot of the whole program there. This is an evening service. There's a native brother up front there leading singing. And we're standing to sing there. I like that picture. Christ is the answer to Haiti's problems. Christ is the answer to America's problems. Our problems are never primarily economic, never primarily structural. Problems, it's a worldview. Christ is the answer to their problems, as well as our problems. Now, you've seen Haiti schools. You've seen American staff helping to train Haitian teachers. You've seen Haitian teachers training their own people. This week we've been talking a little more, or my sessions have been more on thinking, thought processes. If you don't mind, we'll maybe set that thought aside for a little bit. I want to ask you a basic question. Why do you teach? Why do you teach? Why do you go through all the work? Why do we go through the work? Why do we go to Haiti to train them? Why do we support them? Why do you come here? Why do you sit at your desk when you wish you were home? Checking, preparing, why go through all the work? Have you ever asked yourself, surely there's some easier job you could do? I mean, cleaning a hog pen, something, you know. Why teach? Is it because of the status you receive in your community? Teachers tend to have a certain status. In Haiti, they have a unique way of showing this, actually. You see the teachers there. This is not only unique with teachers, it's like any office worker tends to do this. They will let the fingernail on their little finger grow long. And so it might be out pretty long. To my American mind, there's no honor in that. But that's a symbol. And anyone can see that I am not restricted to manual labor. See, and so you let your fingernail grow. Is that why you teach school? For the applause of your fellow man. I am sometimes actually I'm kind of saddened by the status that comes along with long-term teaching. I have an interesting response that I usually give people when they ask me. I'm asked to say, "Well, oh, you teach school? Oh, wow." Yeah, okay, because you know we men who teach at school are kind of a rare breed, and they'll say something about, so how long have you taught? 18 years. Oh, 18 years. Wow. And so I say, well, so what do you do for a living? Well, I lay bricks. How long do you lay bricks? 25 years. Oh, wow. I don't quite get the difference. Okay? I don't quite get the difference. And I'll just say this right up front. Whether you serve God by teaching school, whether you serve God by laying bricks, it is an unspeakable honor to serve God. It is an unspeakable privilege to actually be allowed from God to join in His work. Sometimes I sit in my office and I just marvel. He allows us to take part in His work, to help build His kingdom on earth. That's incredible. That is incredible. Why did Christ, the greatest teacher of all time, teach? Why did He teach? Why the sacrifice? Why the sweat? Why the tears? One night, I was on the phone. My wife was already in bed, and I was on the phone. We were having a little school trouble, and I have a very supportive school, so don't hear this as being a regular thing, but I had a parent who had some questions and took the privilege or the time to help me see some of my weaknesses, and we talked for quite a while there, And I went to the bedroom, and I was there. My wife was already in bed. She was awake yet. I said, "Darlene," I said, "tell me one reason why I should teach school. Just one." I was done. You know, sometimes it helps to say your questions out loud, because I stopped. And I answered my own questions. I said, I know why I teach school. I said, I teach school because of Karen, because of Crystal, Lillian, Sheldon, William, Rosalind. And I named a whole bunch of students. I said, that's why I teach school. Suddenly I knew why. They tell me in the old days that there was you had your street lamps. Today, when it gets dark, they flick on. They say that the towns would have a lamp lighter, and he would enter the town when it's dusk and would his ladder, and would climb, put his ladder against the pole, would climb the ladder and would light that lamp. Come down, go to the next pole, put up his ladder, go up and light the lamp. Come down the third pole, the fourth pole, and the next street. When he was all done, the town had light. But guess how he did it? One lamp at a time. One lamp at a time. And now I named some students that I'm pretty proud of, if you may excuse the borrowed term there. And I know it would be a vast overstatement to say I lit the candle. But I hope you also forgive me that if I, in my imaginations, when I'm quiet, thank the Lord that I could maybe at least help trim the wicks. That's a privilege. I'm forever grateful for being able to maybe just trim a few wicks anyway. I think of several times Christ was called teacher in the Bible. He said, teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Teacher, who is my neighbor? So on. Why did Christ teach? Why did Christ teach? Matthew 19, when he was the ruler said, teacher, what should I do to inherit eternal life? Christ said, if you'd be perfect, go and do this. Later on, another incident. "Teacher, who is my neighbor?" came out through there. He gave the story of the Good Samaritan and who is my neighbor and all that. At the end, he said, "Go and do thou likewise." That answer is why we teach school. We teach school to change lives. We teach for life change. We teach for life change. Academics happens to only be a door. But we teach for life change. Never forget that. That's why Christ taught. I've mentioned several times this week about you as a teacher teaching out of your overflow. About a week ago, again, I was in my own devotions. I was coming through the book of 2 Samuel. I had noticed this passage before. I noticed it again. Near the end of King David's life, in 2 Samuel 21, there's an interesting list at the end of that chapter where it mentions David and it mentions several men, mighty men in his army. And it mentions different giants they slew. The brother of Goliath. One giant had six fingers, six toes. This giant was killed. This giant was killed by men besides David. Now, when David went out to face Goliath, how many giant slayers were there? There were none. There were none. He was the only one. Why, 20, 30, 40 years later, were there multiple giant slayers, I ask? Why? Giant slayers beget giant slayers. You reproduce who you are. That's why it's important to pay attention to who you are. You reproduce who you are. Christ said it well in Luke 6, verse 40. He said, "Everyone that is perfect shall be like as his master." New King James says, "Everyone who is perfect, perfectly trained, will be like his teacher." And thing of it is, we can't really help that. You cannot choose whether you will reproduce. In some shape or form, we will reproduce. I want to say one thing, though. Let's put this whole thing in perspective, okay? Teaching is an honorable position, but we have to keep this in perspective. I did not write the reference down. But Christ said, he said a story. At the end of the story, he said this. He said, "So likewise ye, when ye shall have done all those things which are commanded you, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do." At the end of the day, all glory goes to God. Keep it there. Christ taught for life change. Go and do thou likewise.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.